He is Jay DeMarco. This is Car Keys. Last show of the year.
It is, yes. And I think I thought it would be appropriate to try to review the highlights of the year in both the automotive world and in our little world and our show. And I think I'd like to start the show by, unless you want to.
I was just thinking about it because actually this we're recording it in the old year, but we're also going to play it again during the new year. So it's a good topic. But one of the things that just dawned on me this morning before, and I've hopefully you've got it included, is I believe the brainwashing is complete. I believe that everyone leases a car now, just mentally. And that was, if you're going to do the years, like 10 years, that's a massive, in my view, change. You're either getting 80, 90 month, I'm being exaggerating, loans
yep.
that you're never going to get out of whole,
mm-hmm.
or you have to lease.
Yes. I also think, I know a lot of people who drive, you know, reasonably nice and, you know, substantial, expensive cars. Not crazy expensive, but just nice cars, who just lease their cars and turn them in and just almost...
it's almost like you have no relationship with your car.
No, you just lease the car, turn it in, get another one, and you become kind of, and I hate to say this, but lazy and just, you know, just go
just
in,
order
turn it.
It
in, come out with another one. So you're de facto being somewhat... loyal to whatever brand you started buying or you started leasing, started getting comfortable with. So is that a good thing? Is that not a good thing? I think manufacturers and dealerships are probably doing a reasonably good job in that respect in trying to keep customers. But it seems like it's more about the process and less about the product.
And the thing that made it fun all the way around, not fun, because I'm not a gearhead, but I just remember it was the product. Hey, I want this. Hey, I have to have this. Unless you're that very small group of, anyway.
Well, I was thinking about that too. I think, you know, and I think about what I think I know about the auto world. And, you know, we all like to think we're experts in our own fields and we are in our own minds. The fact of the matter is the auto industry has become so complicated. The product offerings are just there are so many options out there for customers, and we do, whether we like it or not, live in a global economy. So the players, you know, there are about 10 big manufacturers in the world that probably sell, and I don't know the numbers exactly, but a vast majority of cars and light trucks are now present in all markets. It used to be when I was growing up, you know, you had the big three, you know, and I traveled a lot between Europe and the U.S. So when I was in Europe and I lived there, you know, I saw Peugeots and Renaults and a few Mercedes-Benzes. And when I came here, I saw Ford Wagon, you know, Country Squires, and that's how old I am. And, Chevys, and in the early 80s, we started seeing the Chrysler minivans. And they were very separate lines of cars. And, you know, I was a kid, and I liked cars. And I made it, I think I knew pretty much 90% of every car on both sides of the pond. Now, I don't know what's out there. There are so many different cars, and a lot of the same cars are in one shape or form the same here in Europe, and then there's the whole, you know, the rest of the world,
right? Which we get so little, you know. It is such massive markets, China and India. Do we talk about that?
No,
because they don't exist.
They don't exist. They're huge.
But huge defined. It's a little bit like the continent of Africa and journalists in this. We don't do Africa for whatever reason. I have no idea. But it's kind of. Not petite. It's a bloody... Do you know how many people think Africa's a country?
Yeah, well, let's not even go there.
Okay, let's not. But I just... So is that kind of thing in the segmented? And anyone who knows me does know that I watch a lot of football. And this is a time of year when the TV is frequently on. And it appears that the demographic that they are advertising to is the watchers of these particular sports. I can't tell one car from another. Every car – it's not that I can't. It's just that
– Well, there are so many. And so I go back and I think of where the car manufacturers are and who's doing – you know, and back to my year in review, who's doing well, who's doing not so well. The fact of the matter is the biggest car manufacturer in the world, arguably, and it's going back and forth between VW and Toyota, but I'm thinking of Volkswagen right now. You know, both companies sell over 10 million cars a year worldwide. The product line that VW offers in the States, for instance, is somewhat similar, but yet very different from what they offer in what I would call their home market, Germany and the rest of Europe. And then they have a presence that I don't even know what it is in the rest of the world. But obviously, they're selling product, and their product lines. Just to compare again, what I do know, the little I do know, is the European market and what we have here in America. And I see that the product line is a little bit different, and the targeting, the perception of the product is very different. I think Volkswagen in Europe is still considered, the Golf is still considered like the gold standard of small to medium cars. When I grew up there in the 80s and then going into young adulthood in the 90s, the first thing you wanted was a Volkswagen Golf, whether it was a diesel, whether it was a four-door, whether it was a GTI, the Golf was the thing. It was known to be a good product, and there was image associated with it.
But you just said the key right here. Whether you wanted a two-door or a four-door or a diesel, or that used to be going to a restaurant, for example. You know, I love people who just order for the check off food and order it as though it's, you know, I want the vegetarian meal, the this or the that, because that thing was the individualistic and that attached.
But Volkswagen basically had four products at the time. I'm counting them quickly now. The Golf was the main product. There was a smaller car, and there still is, the Polo. And then there was a Passat. And there was a Scirocco, which was a sports car, Volkswagen sports car, which was built on a Golf platform that was very popular both in Europe and here. And that was it. And so, but that has evolved. Now they have way more, the product line in Europe is obviously way greater, and here as well. And the product are different. A Passat here in the U.S. is not at all the same car as it is in Europe. They're, you know, the big SUV, I've talked about this on and off the show. Volkswagen's big SUV is different in Europe than it is here. They used to sell the Touareg here. They can't sell it because they can't sell an $85,000 SUV, mid-sized SUV, which only has two seats, by the way. In the U.S., it's just not going to happen. In Europe, it sells pretty well, and it is somewhat exclusive. And yes, I'm biased because I have a Touareg.
And what is the difference in what is the difference in market, basically, that just off the top of your head, do you know why it is exclusive and why people buy it?
Because it's a good product, and it's expensive. And it's expensive because it's good. It's not expensive because the logo is worth more money than anything else. It is a good product. And it goes back to where, and I know I'm going all over the board here.
That's all right.
You know, I've said all along, Mercedes-Benz became a luxury vehicle and an expensive vehicle, not by trying to brand itself as a luxury vehicle. They just made very sturdy, solid, well-built vehicles. And that reputation took decades to build. And really they've landed where they are now in a company that makes, by the way, cars only. Daimler-Benz used to have interest in other business, I think aviation and a bunch of other industrial.
Well, that's how they started. It was, in fact.
Yeah, but over the last few years, they've pawned off all of the other industries that were not directly auto related. And they're really focused on making good, high-end, quality cars. And it works. Overall, it works. They're not always up there in the top. They have their own issues, but they're doing pretty well. The two manufacturers that come to mind here where you can where I can understand the product line and see the difference in product is Subaru and Mazda.
And neither one of those, by the way, being American companies.
Neither one being American companies, but both have been here on the market for a while. Subaru has been here, I think, since the late
mid-80s.
Or early 80s.
And
the product line, and we've talked about this before, is pretty simple. You know, you find you have the Impreza, you have the Forester, you have the Outback, and now you have the Ascent. They've grown the product line a little bit,
but it's still very simple. But it was also grown deliberately.
It was grown deliberately.
By this, I mean methodically.
Very methodically.
And it was, I just happened to have had a landlady who had to go out and get a car in New York because she was doing, and the cheapest car you could get was a Subaru when they were just coming on. And now that there are, it's just a reminder that if you are slowly and deliberately and methodically breaking into a market, you start with your basic car, as did Hyundai. And, you know, the first one is always...
And by the way, you just mentioned Hyundai. You know, I was looking at the top manufacturers this morning, and I was looking at the FCA Peugeot merger, and it would make it the fourth biggest company in the world, auto company in the world. And I thought, well, who's number four right now? You know, no, who's number three? I can name Toyota and Volkswagen. And I thought, well, who's the third biggest manufacturer in the world?
Hyundai.
Yeah.
But what again?
Where do they start? Simple product.
But in their area, again, if it were covered a little more extensively, in other words, if people were encouraged to look at the
global,
simply because we bang on about how global everything is, except that if you don't know that, if you don't know how massive a company Hyundai is,
it's huge, and they do have.
Other interests.
Interests.
Yes, and they is basically it is
a huge conglomerate,
right? Yeah. And so they have the wherewithal and to do what
build
they
cars
have done
and
here
do and cars well,
right?
And to go from manufacturers and to go more into looking at cars and the product, you know, product specifically, you know, we. One of the most significant vehicles, I think, of the year is the new large SUV that Hyundai has come up with, which, you know, the Palisade under the Hyundai name and the Telluride under the Kia name. Particularly, I think the Kia Telluride is an awesome vehicle. It looks great. It's got a blend of Range Rover, Ford Explorer. It just looks very high-end. And you can get one of those for, you know, around $40,000, and it's a three-row vehicle, fully loaded, all-wheel drive, nice V6. It does everything well. The car reviews are great.
Did I hear V6?
Yeah, it's a thing of the past. That's another thing.
We should do a list of things of the past that are here,
right?
And
but yet it's still there. So it's actually very conservative in its design, and it's done so. You know, for a reason. But I'm also thinking, you know, as Hyundai is finally getting its luxury brand off the ground, I think Genesis is doing a little better this year than it has in the three or four last years since it was created. I think, and I haven't read much about it, but there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, the Hyundai Group is going to come out with a Genesis SUV that will be based on the Palisade and Telluride, and it's most likely going to be a pretty awesome high-end vehicle. So anyway, Hyundai.
Yeah, they're there.
They're there.
And
by the way, when I went to Europe just a couple months ago, a bunch of little Hyundais that I have never seen in my life. You know, so again, different product, same company, different product. In different markets.
And it's worth following, even if you have
But it's hard to follow.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. It's becoming very hard to follow and understand the intricacies.
It's also being intentionally made. The idea and the assumption is that the consumer doesn't, you know, can't deal with the consumer would just rather have prepackaged.
Well, it's so overwhelming that it's easy to just go with the flow, and you go in a dealership and you come out with a car that looks like is what you may or may not need or want. But the differences sometimes between one product and another are just so slim that does it really matter? And that's the, you know, I who knows? What I can say is that, you know, relative to 20, 30 years ago, there pretty much is no bad car on the market. So when you walk into a dealership and you come out with a car, the chances are very good you're coming out with a very good product. Yes, some cars are better than others. Some have problems. But overall, they're pretty darn good compared to what they used to be.
And my favorite is when you get the obligatory, well, no one wants cars anymore stories, which I think is comical because it shows a massive disconnect. I saw the greatest thing, and I think I even sent it to you, is like, oh, wow, you know, electric vehicles are great, but consumers aren't quite – no, was it electric or was it self-driving? I know that self-driving is – you know, outside of a very specific group, not particularly playing in Peoria just yet.
I think, you know, so about the things we've talked a lot about in the last year in 2019 and probably before is both electric vehicles and Tesla is always on the top of our list, and Tesla is also very active in offering self-driving cars. You know, and yes, the fully self-driving car is still, it's years, if not decades away. And I think we have to look at it for what it is. It's a driving aid. I mean, I was driving in traffic yesterday, traffic was heavy in the city. So I leave JFK and I'm on the Van Wyck Expressway, and there's always a stretch that moves at, you know, 10, 20 miles an hour, stop and go for maybe 10 minutes. Well, guess what? You know, that is where you can have a self-driving car.
And I have to throw this in because I am watching people.
I have a butt to the butt.
Yeah, I've got a butt, butt. But because I am really astonished at how people have essentially turned into shrimp. Thanks to their devices and their heads being bent. I think that if you take an action such as driving and discourage people from paying attention, I think that there is a level of inefficiency built into that. It makes me think of vaping. You know, I'm sure that people sat around and thought that vaping was a great idea.
Well, you know, you cannot, you know, it's an aid, and I see your point. I mean, I put it on, I clicked the self-driving feature on, and this was a Volvo, high-end Volvo, and that system works relatively well. But then some moron came from the other lane and cut right in front of me, and if I had not stomped on the brakes, I promise you there would have been a fender bender.
Speaking of which.
So, but I know other cars, I've driven Subarus, which have a system that is way, I think, simpler and more affordable, does a better job at braking if somebody, you know, merges right in front of you. That's my experience.
I just saw one up here, though, and we're going to have to move to safety tips in a second, but I just saw one up here the other day that was so jaw-dropping. And I wondered if a self-driving – I'm not – sure that a self-driving vehicle could have stopped it, because it was someone who literally just drove right across a car that was going forward. Just I guess they didn't see. I have no idea why, but it was one of those only some sort of universal quirk made it possible for those cars not to hit each other.
The systems are pretty good. The emergency braking systems are pretty awesome. They work really well, but in some cases they're just
there's not time. There's not time. There's not room. It's just
There's not room. Physics are still physics.
And I that's a very good way of putting it. Go on.
Which brings me to one of the safety, you know, tips is, yes, cars are better, better traction control, better ABS. Cars tend to do a lot of things on their own, but there is still that little patch of asphalt that, you know, your tires on the asphalt are just a few square inches, and that's it. And if the road conditions are changing or bad, well, there's just so much you can do. So as far as safety tips, I mean, this is, I was driving last night. We're in the middle of winter, and, you know, we're going through this massive thawing of things outside and roads. And all of a sudden, you have a lot of water on the road. And, you know, you go through puddles. You the car is going to float around. There's this thing. Hydroplaning is still a thing. And which really, what really got me last night is wipers. Bad wipers in this kind of weather is really a problem. If you can't see out the front window, you have a problem. And Marshall and I were talking about this just a few minutes ago. You know, I miss the days. I had a Ford back in the 90s where you had a heated windshield, and it really worked well. And I miss that, and I, to this day, still cannot understand why we cannot have a heated front windshield. You know, quick and easy safety tips. Replace the wipers before they
fall
apart.
Yeah, when you see the when you see the streaks, or there's no blade, or it's just...
It's preventive maintenance.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you go for an oil change, every other oil change, just, hey, replace the wipers. Wipers are still fairly inexpensive. They're better than they used to be, like everything else.
But they're necessary. And again, it's... Driving is still a verb. It just is. You have to be somewhat conscious when you. And I know it sounds silly out here in the country, except that it isn't. And everybody drives, and it wants a level of attention that is you just have to.
You should.
Yeah, you should.
But, you know, I know a lot of people who just. I mean, I like driving. I like driving. You know, I like driving fast, which you can't really do on the roads. I just like. Driving, I like the mental activity, and, but others don't. I have no interest.
Right, and I'm not making a judgment about that as much as I am encouraging, in the safety tip section, that if you're going to be out in a hunk of metal, then you should probably be awake.
Yeah, definitely. What I'd like to bring up quickly as a safety tip, we live in the tri-state area, and I think we mentioned that last week too, off the show. but as you go from one state to another,
totally,
you know, you're
conditions.
On the highway, the conditions can change very dramatically. New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts treat their roads differently, different product, different... different salt, sand combination. I haven't seen a lot of sand, by the way. Do we still have sand on the roads?
I haven't seen a lot of sand.
No. But it's, you know, both what is used and the timing of it may be different. So you may be on a perfectly clear road in one state, and then you cross over the state line, and all of a sudden, you know.
You got a totally different.
Totally different conditions.
And I remember,
that can be treacherous. So.
Yep.
Just simple tip, just be very careful crossing state lines or even county lines.
And it's not even something that you think of until it happens to you. I just remember coming up one night in a, you know, what had turned into a fairly substantial snow event. And I was coming up 22, and I happened to cut from New York to Connecticut, and it was a completely different world and preferable. And it was at that moment that I went, oh, yeah, different state, different times, different everything. This was decades ago. But if you listen to you, then maybe you don't have to experience it for yourself.
Yeah. Sorry about this. As a side note, for those of us who know, you know, 41 going from Connecticut into Massachusetts, and you have the first few S's with the what's the farm with the – not the cows, but they have
What?
In when you get into Sheffield.
Right.
Anyway, there are a couple turns there where there's
The S's. Okay.
The S's. And that is, you know, you'll see cars on the roof there every winter. Every winter, there'll be a car on its roof, you know, or two or three.
Without fail.
Without fail. I don't know what I think about that, but.
You don't know what you think about it?
I don't know why I'm thinking about that.
Just because it's a different state. And you said if you're not focused, you don't know. And he is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Case.